everyone, there's only so much time in the day. That's why we edited this Vermont Edition podcast for brevity. I know you'll thank us.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Yesterday morning, Vermont Senator and presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders announced in a video message that he was suspending his campaign effective immediately.
I could give you better news, but I think you know the truth. And that is that we are now some 300 delegates behind Vice President Biden, and the path toward victory is virtually impossible. So while we are winning the ideological battle, and while we are winning the support of so many young people and working people throughout the country, I have concluded that this battle for the Democratic nomination will not be successful. And so today, I am announcing the suspension of my campaign.
Campaign politics have taken a back seat in recent weeks as the country and the world grapple with the health and economic effects of the continued spread of COVID-19. Senator Sanders acknowledged that necessary refocusing of priorities in his announcement.
As I see the crisis gripping the nation, exacerbated by a president unwilling or unable to provide any kind of credible leadership, and the work that needs to be done to protect people in this most desperate hour, I cannot in good conscience continue to mount a campaign that cannot win and which would interfere with the important work required of all of us in this difficult hour.
Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to look back on the Sanders campaign and what it has meant for the Democratic message, as well as the influence Sanders still expects to have on the party leading up to and at the Democratic National Convention, currently rescheduled for August. Sanders remains on the ballot in states that have yet to hold their primaries, and he hopes to continue amassing delegates even as he has suspended his campaign activities. Joining us today to talk over all of this are three experienced political analysts, VPR's Bob Kinzel, our senior political reporter. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Jane.
Middlebury College political science professor Matt Dickinson. Hello again, Professor Dickinson.
Hi, Jane.
And Linda Fowler, Dartmouth College professor of government. Professor Fowler, nice to talk with you as well.
It's good to be with you, Jane.
It's, you know, I wasn't necessarily expecting that we were going to do this today, but it's nice to have this reunion, which I think we kind of all expected. Professor Fowler, it's not exactly a surprise that Senator Sanders suspended his campaign, but what do you think went into the decision to do it yesterday as opposed to 2 weeks ago or 3 months from now?
Well, it's always hard to speculate about something that's such a deeply personal decision. And we certainly had intimations that this would happen about a week ago, I think, in the news media were beginning to say that there was a discussion going on among his advisors. But this is something he felt he came close and was not treated fairly by the Democrats in 2016. And he was ahead, it looked like, at the beginning of the primary season. And it may just have been really tough to finally let it go.
Bob Kinzel, you may have been tough to finally let it go, but in some ways it took a long time to get there. But also, you know, this idea that he's going to suspend the campaign but not end it. It's sort of like a medium step toward the end. Bob, what do you think about that?
Well, I certainly get the impression, though, Jane, that he is dropping out of the race, and we can argue about the semantics of dropping out, suspending, whatever. The reality is that he will still be on the ballot in the upcoming primaries. There are a whole bunch of them that are going to take place in June. He will continue to amass delegates. I think he's somewhere up around 1,000 delegates now, give or take 10 or 20. And so when he goes to the convention this summer, he's going to have a chunk of delegates, and he's going to be able to say, hey, folks, when we put this party platform together, let's make sure that there's some very progressive ideas in there.
Yeah, Matt Dickinson, I mean, that is an important piece of this, isn't it, that he is, you know, not going to be campaigning, but he does still want to have influence. And that's an interesting acknowledgement to make. And I'm actually going to play a little bit of sound here from what he said yesterday in his announcement. Here's Sanders yesterday.
I will stay on the ballot in all remaining states and continue to gather delegates. While Vice President Biden will be the nominee, we must continue working to assemble as many delegates as possible at the Democratic convention, where we will be able to exert significant influence over the party platform and other functions.
So, Professor Dickinson, you know, he is suspending his campaign. He's suspending campaign activities. He's obviously nobody's doing rallies or anything like that. But it's an interesting perspective to take on his part to say, I still want your vote on these ballots, even though Biden's going to be the nominee. And I acknowledge that. Vote for me anyway in the remaining primary states. It's sort of a mixed message.
It is a mixed message. And if I'm Joe Biden, I have to be a bit troubled by this. It's a possibility. It's a deja vu all over again. Remember, in 2016, there was a lingering criticism among the Clinton crowd that Bernie Sanders stayed in too long, and then once he conceded the race to Clinton, he did not actively support her in the manner that she and her supporters expected. And you have to wonder if this sort of quasi-suspending the campaign, but meanwhile, keep voting for me, is a reprise of that that similar dynamic.
Yeah, you say lingering anger or disappointment, Matt, and it still lingers. I mean, you still hear Clinton supporters even today who are still very angry about that.
Starting with the candidate herself, who has said publicly that he did not do enough for her. And it raises, I think, a critical issue, which is, will Bernie Sanders supporters eventually come around to supporting Joe Biden as the nominee, or will they sit this one out?
What do you think about that, Professor Fowler? I mean, this is a big question of his that seems to I don't know whether it's a lesson that needed to be learned from 2016 or something, but it's, you know, it's happening again in some ways.
Well, it is. And we have to remember that Bernie's not a Democrat.
Right.
And in the end, the idea that he would put the interests of the party ahead of the interests of his movement, I think I've always felt that that was a stretch. And to me, the interesting things that I'm waiting to see are whether there was a drop off in his fundraising. The great weapon he had against the party establishment was that he had all these small donors who were sending him weekly contributions. And given the enormous stress economically and psychologically and everything else, I just really wonder, particularly that young people are among the groups most adversely affected by the economic disruption of the pandemic. So I really wonder whether part of the calculation wasn't a strategic one, that the money was drying up and that that in the end the path wasn't really there and he wasn't going to be able to keep going and that he might end up embarrassing himself. At least now, if he shows up with delegates, you know, Biden will be polite to him. But otherwise, probably not. I think the other thing that's interesting about this is that this really, Michigan is what did him in the sense that this went from being a multi-candidate race to a two-person race. And I don't think he was ever going to win a two-person contest for the nomination. The support for more moderate candidates always significantly outnumbered the combined support for Warren and Sanders in all the primaries that we saw.
Yeah, and as you point out, it's pretty tough when everybody else is throwing their support behind Joe Biden for Bernie Sanders even to recapture some of what maybe other supporters would be going to if their candidate is saying, let's coalesce around Biden. That's a tough obstacle to surmount. We've been getting some just reactions from people on Facebook. Emily writes in to say, I feel incredible sadness, but feel so proud and lucky we still have him working for us Vermonters. Sarah says it was necessary at this point for him to drop out. But I'm so grateful for his work in steering the Democratic Party toward more progressive causes. Blythe is angry. Blythe says, I'm so angry I could cry. He's the president that we need, but not the one we deserve. We have the one we deserve. At least Sanders is still fighting for us. Mark, though, has a different perspective. Mark says, I'm glad. Perhaps he'll try to help Vermonters, but probably just go back to being a do-nothing senator whose only accomplishment is renaming post offices. Such a disgrace to Vermont. Bob Kinzel, I mean, this is now a time when Senator Sanders can redouble his efforts on behalf of Vermonters. He's going to be having a town hall meeting with the rest of the Vermont delegation and Vermont's governor tonight. Do you see signs that Vermonters will see more of him as a senator, as, you know, the representative of Vermont in Washington now that he suspended his campaign?
Jane, absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. And I think his office will be working with small businesses throughout the state and certainly to work with folks who have now applied for unemployment benefits. When you think that the unemployment rate in Vermont could be somewhere between 20% and 25%, this is the kind of thing that Senator Sanders' office has done. I just wanted to mention, I think the most important question that we would be discussing today is, can Bernie persuade his supporters to vote for Joe Biden? And as Matt mentioned, I think the Democrats' worst nightmare is a repeat of 2016. And it's instructive to remember that about 8% of Sanders supporters voted for Donald Trump in 2016, and around 10% didn't vote at all. Now, when you consider that three states were decided by roughly 75,000 votes, this is really, really important. And I think some people are arguing that this won't happen again in 2020 because the Sanders supporters who voted for Trump now know what they're getting themselves into. They have the Trump record over the last 3 or 4 years. And I think we're going to need to see Joe Biden reach out to Bernie's supporters and convince them that he backs some of the key elements of Bernie's platform. I think there's a huge responsibility on Joe Biden's shoulders right now, and that the election could fall either way on how successful he is in convincing Bernie supporters to support his campaign.
But Professor Dickinson, how can Joe Biden reach out to Bernie supporters and get them on his side when Senator Sanders himself, in that bite we just heard, said, you know, I'm still on the ballot. I want to keep amassing delegates. I want to get to the convention with more delegates. I mean, he's essentially saying, vote for me, even though I'm out of the campaign. He's not yet saying vote for Joe Biden, and maybe that will happen in August. But, I mean, that's tough for Joe Biden. He certainly can't get them on his side now if Sanders himself is telling his supporters to continue voting for him in the states that he's still on the ballot in.
That's precisely right. I think your point about this is the opening gambit in what could be a month-long behind-the-scenes negotiation between the Biden camp and the Sanders camp is an important one to keep in mind. Right now, Biden and Sanders are probably trying to work out a framework in which Biden says, I can go this far on raising the minimum wage. I can go this far on expanding eligibility for free college tuition. I can go this far towards Medicare for all. But, Bernie, I have to keep my eye on the ball. And as Bob correctly points out, Hillary Clinton lost the Electoral College in part because 70,000 votes went against her in three key states. If I'm Joe Biden and I want to recapture those white working class voters that defected, I got to be careful on how far I go in embracing elements of the progressive policy program. So there's a delicate act going on here. But I think the best way to think about this is Sanders right now has laid down the gauntlet and said, I've got this potential leverage, and I will continue to use it unless you begin publicly coming in my direction. So let's see what happens a month from now, 2 months from now, 3 months from now. You might see Sanders softening his position, but right now he doesn't see any need to do it.
But Linda Fowler, do you see that likely? I mean, could Joe Biden ever get close enough to what Bernie Sanders would like for us to expect to see a full-throated support of Vice President Biden from Senator Sanders?
Well, he certainly already has moved quite far on health care, not to Medicare for all, but certainly for some kind of a single-payer option. And I guess it would be Medicare for anyone who wants it, sort of more in the Pete Buttigieg line of thinking. But I would say that Sanders is taking some risks here because he hasn't appealed to the hardcore of the Democratic Party. He, you know, older blue collar people, blacks, and a number of other groups of voters. What if the young people don't show up?
Yeah,
that they decide that the race is over, and they've lost their jobs and they're worried about their families and they just decide to not vote. That this that sort of in some ways weakens Bernie's hand at the convention, in my view. But I also think that women are identifiably the key group in the race as far as the Electoral College is concerned. I think Biden knows it, in addition to working class voters who voted for Sanders in 2016. The one gettable group of voters that Trump got in 2016 are suburban women. And they are not interested in revolution or even radical ideas. And Biden has to be very careful about not antagonizing the group that put the Democrats over the top in the 2018 congressional races.
That's a tough needle to thread. Bob, I want to ask you to clarify some language here, because we're getting competing ideas from some listeners. So Joshua wrote in and says, every article says Sanders is, quote, suspending his campaign. He's not suspending it. He's ending it. Saying he is suspending his campaign makes it look like he is resuming his campaign later. But John writes in about what he's hearing in the media, and John says the wording in most reporting is intentional to trip people up and think there's no longer a way to vote for Sanders in their primaries. So the official language is he's suspending his campaign. Can you explain what that means and why people might be having these different ideas of what they think that means and what they think people are reporting?
Jane, I don't think there's an easy answer here. You know, I noticed yesterday with the National Press Corps that the word suspending his campaign came up very few times. The word dropping out of the race was used mostly by the national news media. I think it's a way for Bernie to say, I mean, we heard him in the clip say there's no path to victory here. He now recognizes that. He still wants to fight for this progressive agenda. And by encouraging people to vote for him in the upcoming primaries in June, that gives him some leverage going into the Democratic convention. You know, I'd also think that I think the whole coronavirus healthcare emergency might be shifting how people view the role of government. I mean, when you think in the last two or three weeks that Congress unanimously approved a $2 trillion economic stimulus package, when we're talking this week about another $200 to $500 billion, followed by a second stimulus package, perhaps in the next 3 or 4 weeks, of more benefits for unemployed people and cash payments to people. I wonder now if people are looking at government and saying, you know, there are some times, there are some emergencies where the idea is that government should be doing more for people, not less. And I wonder how that's going to influence this whole political debate, especially when we think about things like Medicare for All.
Yeah, and I want to get into that in a little while, Bob, and to the rest of you as well, because I think there are some questions about how the current atmosphere with COVID-19, with what we're seeing the government doing, might actually change not just what happens at the Democratic National Convention, but also what voters are wanting and thinking about when it comes to their government. But just on this point of suspension, Matt Dickinson, there's a financial implication, isn't there, as well, between the idea of suspending, officially suspending or officially ending a campaign?
Well, it has implications for the delegates. If you suspend your campaign, it means you hold on to your delegates. They're not free agents to go migrate at the convention and support somebody else.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, that's an important consideration as Bernie tries to amass more of them, because they are beholden to him, at least at that first run through at voting at the convention.
Rick is on the line from East Montpelier. Rick, what are you thinking about?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just briefly, I think Hillary's blaming Bernie for not doing enough for her campaign when clearly she did not even go to Michigan, Wisconsin, and maybe another couple key battleground states to campaign, just assuming that she was going to win those. And I think that's the kind of thing that, you know, turned people off and why, you know, they didn't want to go to the polls. They did not want another you know, neoliberal Democrat there. So that's why some voted for Trump or either didn't go. So I think it's really important that Bernie does keep his hand in this campaign to keep pushing the more progressive agenda, that for Joe to take that up as best as he can, because those are the kinds of things that will inspire people to go out to the polls and not just say, oh, well, here we go again. Might as well not even vote.
Yeah, Rick, I understand that perspective and appreciate that you're tying what happened in 2016 to what you see as, you know, sort of similar themes, but a different approach now. Thank you for that. Joan is with us from Essex. Joan, how about you? What are you thinking?
Well, I was going to say pretty much what Rick said. I think that for me, and I'm an older person, and hi, Bob, and I spoke to people all over the country where I was either had friends or relatives. We all like Bernie, okay. I have never liked Hillary. So for some of the people, they didn't want to vote for Hillary. And my sister said to me, you're going to have to hold your nose and vote for Hillary. This time, I think that that Rick is exactly right, that Bernie is still in there so that he can get Biden to go over the things that really matter. And we see now how much health care is important, and we don't have it like the industrialized places. Our colleges in New England are so expensive.
Yeah, and Joan, I appreciate hearing your thoughts on that, too. And again, this question of, you know, differences and similarities between 2016 and 2020. And Joan, really getting to that question we're going to dive into in a little while of what do people want now, especially as these questions about affordability, the survival of things like colleges coming out of the coronavirus crisis and healthcare are really coming to the forefront under the COVID-19 pandemic. But let's get another thought in here from Kim while we're talking to calls. Kim is with us from Rutland. Hi there, Kim.
Hi, how are you doing? My comment today is simply that I think that, you know, while Bernie has a dream, and I can't even say that I disagree with a lot of the points he makes, but I happen to be one of those more practical liberals that sees that any more than building a wall across the entire southern border was a doable promise. I think a lot of the things that Bernie promotes, while morally based, are things that are in, especially in our political climate and in this situation with COVID, are still just unattainable given our political discourse these days. And so, you know, what I'm looking for is in Bernie is to realize that we need to be a bit more practical and use Medicare for all and free tuition in state colleges and things like that as a goal. And I think Biden can admit to that, but certainly not something that we're going to shove down people's throats, because if we try to do what Bernie has tried to do, we will lose and we will end up with this monster in charge of our country. And so that's basically my point, is like everybody needs to just take a deep breath and say, I'll promise you the moon, but if I can't deliver the moon, then why did you vote for me? You know?
Yeah, Kim, thanks. I appreciate hearing what you're thinking about as well. And we'll get another thought in here from Donna in South Burlington. Donna, how about you?
Yes. Hi. I think the last caller put a lot of the points that I was going to make really well. I very much agree with that. And I think as an example, I think it would be very good for Sanders to speak to his supporters about the differences between what he's promoting for health care and tuition, free tuition, and what Biden's view is on that. And a lot of it comes down to the practicality of it. You know, it's like, is it actually possible? And having just signed up for Medicare, I'm at that age, and I just signed up. I'm not yet on it, but I just signed up for it. And to point out to people that Medicare is not free. You know, there's a lot of costs. You know, you have copays and deductibles just as you do with regular insurance. and that it's not free. So I think it's great as a campaign thing to say free Medicare, free tuition, but it's not free. And if he just would be honest with people and say there are costs here, and you know, you can't be completely pure about it.
Let me ask you this, Donna. With the COVID-19 crisis around the country, and Vermont has a very high rate of people in the state with health insurance, extremely high compared to many other states, do you see your feelings changing on how you think a Democratic candidate might approach this question of getting universal access to health care in whatever form that takes? I mean, do you see your views changing, and do you think the views of Democratic voters may be changing?
Well, I think the current Biden's current position, which is that, you know, you should have access to Medicare for all if you want it, and that those people who prefer to keep their own insurance should be able to keep it. You know, that you can't force somebody to do something when it's covering. But I think, you know, with COVID, I mean, there's certain costs that, you know, certain types of things that could be covered under the healthcare without copays and things like that. But, you know, 2 weeks in a hospital in intensive care, I don't see how, you know, I mean, I think you shouldn't have to pay enormous amounts of money as co-insurance and co-pays for things like that, you know, when it's probably unreasonable to expect people to be able to afford even some of their co-pays.
Yeah, Donna, thanks for sharing that question and thinking and ruminating on this question of healthcare. And Bob Kinzel, you were bringing this up earlier, you know, questions now that may be different than 2 months ago even about what people expect from their government and how that might then influence their voting come November. And how do you see this playing out in the Democratic Party primary now, with Sanders' campaign suspended and Biden trying to make the play that he's going to be able to beat Donald Trump?
You know, Jane, I've kind of felt all along that the differences among most of the leading Democratic presidential candidates when it came to health care, those differences were really not that great. That it was the news media looking for some differences and making a big wedge. Now, let me explain why I think that's true. Back in 2010, when Obamacare was passed, there was no support, or there wasn't enough support, for a public option. In 2010, a public option was considered too radical to pass in the U.S. Congress. So fast forward to 2020, and we see almost all the candidates talking about Medicare for whoever wants it. So there's the public option. Even Sanders was talking about, when he went to his full Medicare for All plan, there had to be a transition period. It wasn't like we were going to wake up on July 1st and we were all going to be enrolled in Medicare. So, you know, Joe Biden has been talking about the public option. The other candidates talked about the public option. Some of them even said, let's do the public option for a couple of years. Let's see how it works out. Maybe we'll have to adjust it and go to a more regulatory plan and mandatory plan at that point. So, you know, I don't think there's this huge, huge bridge between Biden and Bernie when it comes to health care. And I actually have to believe, Jane, in the last 72 hours, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders had a heart-to-heart talk.
Have you gotten any proof of that, Bob? Because you said this yesterday, too. You really think this happened?
I don't think there's any question that Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden somewhere in the last couple of days had a heart-to-heart talk and said, all right, what are we going to do here? And Bernie getting an assurance from Joe Biden that some of the key issues that Bernie talked about, health care for all, addressing the issue of income inequality, college tuition, raising the federal minimum wage, all these issues now even have more currency with what's happening in the country economically as we're getting battered because of the coronavirus. So I think those two people came to an agreement on the general, very general outline of what Sanders could expect from Biden and what Biden could expect from Sanders. They remember 2016. Neither of them wants a repeat of 2016. That is really the worst nightmare the Democrats could have. So I think Biden and Sanders both realize that and will put together maybe an uneasy truce. But at some point, I would think that the Democratic platform is going to reflect a lot of the progressive ideas. And we're going to see Bernie Sanders enthusiastically campaigning for Joe Biden, because he has said all along that goal number one, number two, number three, defeat Trump. And if that is really what his goal was, he's going to have to get behind Joe Biden.
Yeah, enthusiastic support. I'm going to quote you on that, Bob, when we see it. And I wish we could ask Senator Sanders, you know, when did he make this decision? How much has he talked with Joe Biden? We invited him on the show. He hasn't responded, but we'll keep trying. And I know Henry Epp on All Things Considered is also trying here at VPR. So we hope to get to speak with Senator Sanders at some point. Linda Fowler, do you see it the same way?
Not really.
Good. I like a little disagreement between panelists.
I think enthusiastic support is a stretch. And I think that that the ideas that Bernie is talking about will still be pretty – they will find their way into the platform, but they will still be substantially less than what he would want for his platform. I think increasingly we have to think about the Sanders campaign as a third party movement, and that the Democrats will co-opt as much of it as they think they need to get the majority. But the idea that the Sanders people are going to be calling the shots in this convention, I think is doesn't feel plausible to me. At the same time, I think, I can't remember who it was, said that the climate is so different than it was a couple of weeks ago, even. For one thing, the insurance company may find itself on the ropes having to pay, you know, coverage for all the people who are sick. And they may be less aggressive in opposing. Same with the hospitals. They, you know, some of the main opponents of a more progressive insurance plan will maybe talking a different tune. And so that may or may not be attributable to Bernie's persuasiveness. It may have something to do with a very real changing context.
And Matt Dickinson, what's your perspective?
I think that Linda's point about Joe Biden being in the driver's seat is an important one. We have to remember this is the second time that Bernie chased the brass ring and fell short. And we have to begin to think, why? Is it something to do with his message? Is the endorsement or the embrace of progressivism not as widespread as he hoped? Is it something to do with the messenger himself? Was Bernie approach, his abrasive approach, his inflexibility, his strident approach, off-putting to suburban women voters and the other constituents, African-Americans, who simply did not come to his side. Those are important considerations going forward in trying to evaluate the strength of his message, not just in 2020 in the convention, but beyond that as well. It is not clear to me that although we can agree Sanders has changed the conversation, that the end result of that conversation is going to be a more progressive set of policies embraced by the Democratic Party.
Richard writes in to say the question should not be whether Bernie's supporters support Biden. The question is whether Biden will support Sanders' policies. Peggy in East Randolph writes, those who don't think Sanders has served Vermont well at the federal level just haven't been paying attention. Those who voted in the Vermont primary for Sanders, among whom I include myself, this is Peggy, not Jane, need to understand that the November election day will be no time to sit at home and sulk. Not to act is an act. Not to vote is a vote for Trump. And Gemma says, I'm sad to see that the Sanders campaign has ended. I understand the decision, but mostly I'm sad to see that more Americans don't share in Bernie's vision. Now more than ever, it seems so painfully apparent the need for social justice, strong leadership, and universal quality health care. Seems like now more than ever we could use someone in the White House who stands for the people. Other thoughts coming in as well. Ann says, I've always liked Bernie and his ideas about a better government. However, at this point, I don't feel like he could beat Trump. It's so important to get Trump out. Please, everyone who supported Bernie, support Democrats because we cannot continue with Trump. Now, on the other hand, there are listeners writing in who say they think Bernie Sanders could have beat Donald Trump, but perhaps Joe Biden can't. Mike says, I'm proud of Bernie, of course, but the DNC has to go. There's no way Joe Biden beats Trump. And John says, Joe will crumble next to Trump. To be clear, I don't support Trump. It's Hillary all over again. Let's go to Judy, who's calling in from Paulette. Hi, Judy. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'm going to suggest that if Joe Biden were to have Stacey Abrams as a running mate, that we might get a lot more of Bernie's. I am a strong Bernie supporter, but Stacey Abrams is a woman. She's black. She's quite progressive, and she's young enough to have experience as a Georgia lawmaker, and she's not a Northeasterner. And I think that if we could have Joe Biden possibly pick her as a running mate, I think that the progressive voters who I've heard might stay home because they don't want Joe Biden, I think that she would be a wonderful choice. Also, most likely because of their age, Joe Biden and Bernie would not be running for the next term. And I'm 86. I would like to see my children and my grandchildren, and hopefully me too, but I'd like to see them have a good future with somebody other than Trump. The people I know who are voting for Trump, almost all are voting on his birth control, his lack of support for birth control, and I'm trying to convince them that there's a lot more to it than that.
Well, Judy, I appreciate hearing from you, and it's interesting, you know, when you say that you hope to see Joe Biden pick Georgia State lawmaker Stacey Abrams. Biden has committed to choosing a woman as his running mate. I don't think he's committed to choosing a woman of color, but Stacey Abrams certainly there in the mix. Many people are talking about that. Danny is with us from Pulteney. Danny, what are you ruminating on?
Hi there, Jane. I just wanted to give a perspective from somebody under 30, just someone who's affected by a lot of the issues that Bernie is trying to fight for. I'm 25. I went to school for 4 years to get a bachelor's degree. I'm currently $50,000 in debt that I don't know if I'll ever really be able to pay off. And just that's one of the places where I come from of issues that are affecting me personally. But I also think that Bernie he always had the normal working class people in mind and wanted to take our economy and our country from being completely run by special interests and billionaires and try and make it something that was actually authentic and real. And I think for a lot of us at this age, we don't feel like there's that authentic, real feeling of democracy and feeling like our vote matters. And honestly, right now, I don't know where I stand of what I want to do. And I want to do the right thing. And I don't want Trump running this country because it's honestly the most dangerous person to be running the United States of America that I could think of, I guess, at this point. And it's just really hard for people in my age group. And I just wanted to get that perspective out there. And I think that it's funny that the question is if Bernie supporters will switch to vote for Joe Biden, why wouldn't it be that if Bernie's running with all the right power and with all the right issues in place, that why wouldn't it be that Biden supporters should go behind Bernie? Why isn't that the question here instead of people trying to do the right thing, getting behind someone they don't think is going to do the right thing?
Well, Danny, wouldn't it be the same for Biden supporters to get behind Bernie? I mean, Biden has more delegates. Bernie Sanders said in his statement yesterday he's looked at the path ahead and doesn't see a way to win. But are you saying you think Biden supporters should still go for Sanders, or are you saying they should try to kind of form a bigger tent and maybe include more of Bernie Sanders' policies in the Biden platform?
I think in order for Joe Biden to be voted for by Bernie supporters, he has to include things that are more under, you know, what Bernie was trying to have happen. But I also think that what I'm saying is that other than not being Trump and not being and like that he was Obama's vice president, there's not really much going for Joe Biden that makes him a tantalizing person to vote for, whereas Bernie had everything that we should be doing in this country going forward. And it's really frustrating to see that, possibility end, because I don't know when the next time we're going to see a candidate like this. And I've never been excited about politics or voting because I felt like the whole system was against me to begin with. And a lot of people feel that way because it's kind of true. So.
Yeah, well, Danny, I really appreciate hearing you and getting that perspective in that we have heard from a lot of people and many, especially Bernie Sanders supporters, who say, I never felt inspired before this, or I didn't feel like politics or a politician was speaking to me. And that really has been one of the most powerful parts of the Bernie Sanders campaign, is getting these people like you, Danny, behind him, who say, this is somebody who speaks to me, who speaks to the issues that are affecting my life. I mean, Danny's talking about $50,000 of student loan debt and not sure how to pay it off. And here was this politician who many Sanders supporters feel like is speaking directly to them. And that is very powerful, to feel like a politician has your back and is speaking to you. Lopi is calling in from Rutland. Lopi, what's your perspective? Love to hear it.
Hi, good morning or good afternoon. I am a 54-year-old independent artist, and my perspective is that Bernie Sanders embodied much of what this country needs right now, and the coronavirus is just showing more clearly how much we need his policies. And I wanted to really stress that there's hundreds of thousands of voters in this country who feel like they're being held hostage by a two-party system, and that we really don't feel that Biden represents anything that we want. In fact, he is pretty much the opposite of many things, including the way his stand on climate, the bankruptcy bill, which put a lot of students into debt for like pretty much forever, and just his electability, I think, is a huge question mark for many of us, that he is going to be slaughtered by Trump, and that Bernie was really, if the Democratic Party had truly been behind Bernie instead of consolidating behind the weakest candidate, that he could have really done some amazing stuff for this country. Now, as a Vermonter, I just want to say that I'm so proud of Bernie, and that he is going to continue to, I'm really relieved that he's still in the Senate, at least, that he can continue to do excellent work there. But I think I agree with the previous caller that he's a once-in-a-lifetime candidate, and many of us who are even in the older age bracket felt very inspired and hopeful. And so many times we have been forced to vote against somebody instead of for somebody, and now we're put in that position again. And we really want to vote for somebody that represents what we really want, instead of the pharmaceutical companies, the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah, Lopi, I hear what you're saying. And let me get a final thought here. As you know, you and Danny and others are speaking about your feelings here and thinking about what happens in the next few months, what happens to you, what happens to your job, what happens to your debt, and what happens in presidential politics. And they're all tied together. Linda Fowler, what are your thoughts as you hear from Vermonters expressing these various views?
Well, I think the party has been in a 15-month slugfest with, 16, 20 different people advocating views. And I think it's a lot to take in that it's actually over.
Yeah.
And to sort it out. And I think people really don't know yet how the virus is going to be affecting the way the fall campaign evolves. So I'm very sympathetic to people who put their hopes on Bernie and how deflated they feel right now. But I also would say that a lot of things could happen.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we just don't know what this race is how it's going to play out in the short run. And we also don't know what Biden is going to be able to do to pull the party together. There's been a lot of talk about appointing a unity government before the race starts, and that might do a lot to bring people together.
Matt Dickinson, final thoughts from you here as we move forward, you know, sort of jumping off what Linda said?
Well, your callers are just presenting wonderful perspectives on the support of that Bernie gets from particularly younger voters, and that we were all in love at one point in life. And then the bloom is off, and now they're going through the stages of grief. And the question is whether they'll reach acceptance before November or whether they'll be mired in anger and how that anger will play out. And as Linda and Bob, I think, have so articulated so well, the coronavirus adds an extra wrinkle here, which makes predicting how this is going to play out particularly difficult. But this is a time of peril for the Democratic Party, and it'll be interesting to see whether Joe Biden can unify them.
Bob, you got about 15 seconds. You want to unify us?
Absolutely. You know, I think, Jane, how many times in the last couple of days have people said to you, when is life going to come back to normal?
Mm-hmm.
That is such a huge question in all of our lives. And I wonder, given that reality, if people are feeling that a candidate like Joe Biden might be enough for them to support in the November election.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. And I know all three of you will be watching it, and so will I. And I hope we can all get together again, maybe actually face-to-face next time. That's VPR's Bob Kinzel, senior political reporter, Matt Dickinson, Middlebury College political science professor, and Linda Fowler, professor of government at Dartmouth College. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you, Jane.
Thanks, Jane.